Hello and welcome to another episode of FPL by Dummies. Actually, I'm going to start that again. Ignore that.
Oh, yes.
No, you're not putting that in.
Okay.
Hello and welcome to another episode of FPL by Dummies with your hosts, myself, Cam and Tom. How are you, mate?
I'm good. I'm going to apologise in advance because I'm feeling a bit hoarse on the older voice this week. Sorry, by hoarse I mean sexier.
The dulcet tones.
I've been enjoying the international break a bit too much this weekend, so my voice is completely gone.
How did Antigua get on this international break?
They didn't play.
Oh. Well, then what are you celebrating then?
Well, exactly. I was going to come up with a really funny pun about, like, oh, Antigua won 5-0 on the weekend, so I went on a bit of a mad one. But
were you celebrating the fact they didn't play and you didn't have to submit yourself to watching 90 minutes of that?
Of Antigua and Barbuda. What do you mean? You're saying it's like, I don't like watching Antigua and Barbuda. Like, when it's on, if it's on telly, if it's actually televised, I would be watching it.
So you never watched it?
No, pretty much never.
Enough waffle. If you can't tell by the title, we sit and do a bit more waffling just like this for an hour or so about fantasy football. So this week we're going to have a rundown of the fixtures of game week 7, what happened, and then some old classics of our dating game, Snog, Marry, Avoid and Would You Rather. So as Tom just mentioned, we're partway through the international break at the time of recording. England have trounced Andorra 5-0. Who have we got next up?
I don't know. Do we care?
No, not really.
Team that will probably put six past and everyone will think we're the best team in the world again.
Until we play someone half decent in the next qualifier. Or not even the qualifier, the actual tournament. But yeah, bit of a distant memory. But how was game week 7 for you?
Yeah, good. I had a good game week. I didn't captain Ronaldo like everybody else. So didn't follow the crowd. Naturally, it paid off. Captain Bruno Fernandes got an assist.
What did Brilliant. You end up on? 53, yeah. I was on 46 last week. I think I went Lukaku, yeah, I did. So that was a bit disappointing, particularly... Well, I mean, they were against Southampton, and because typically Alonso didn't play, Livramento ended up coming off the bench. So I was kind of glad that they didn't get absolutely thumped, because then I would have been on minus points with the defender coming on. And as it was, he got an assist, so that kind of worked out quite well. But yeah, I was quite a bit above average, but then having not captained Salah and then the returns he produced on the Sunday kind of affected my rank a little bit. But we're back inside the top 1 mil, which is big.
That's good.
Given that I slipped like literally a million places. we're back inside at 994k, just by the skin of our teeth, but we take it.
Yeah, it wasn't a good September for you, was it, mate? But we'll get on to that a bit later.
Well, let's not.
yeah. But
I think it was a bit of a boring game week, really. Should we just talk about the game that we actually went to see?
Yeah, we actually went to go see West Ham versus Brentford.
The Mighty Bees.
The Mighty Bees. Yeah, went with our good friend of the podcast, Suge from Planet FPL. We sat with the West Ham fans. It was absolutely glorious.
I think it was just so funny every time... I say every time, the two times Brentford scored, I just looked to my right and Tom was just sat there like trying his hardest to keep it together, just like, because we were surrounded by a bunch of, you know, East End boys giving it the big end to the Brentford fans in the other end, and Tom was just sat there like trying not to stand out, like, so he didn't get the shit beaten out of him. But
yeah, I think I did a pretty good job, and I think the only mistake I made was the fact that when West Ham scored, I think I was the only one sat down.
Even I stood up like way before you with like everyone else, and he just sat there for a second and was like, oh shit, I should be up clapping. Like,
yeah, it was like such a polite clap as well. It's like, oh brilliant, well done boys, like, fantastic, well done Jarrod Bowen, yeah prick. And then it's got to be the perfect moment that was when, so Brentford, let's be honest, they played quite a lot of time-wasting football. But the best part of it was definitely when they kicked the ball at the substitute, Johan Visser, who then threw the ball away as a substitute. And then the West Ham fans chanted, it was like,
you're not playing because you're shit or something like that.
You're not playing because you're shit, that was it, yeah. And then he came on and scored the winner.
In the 94th minute, and knee slid in front of all of them. Like,
yeah,
it was brilliant. Like, you couldn't have written a better script. But
no, it was good to be back at live football, wasn't it? It was good fun.
Did enjoy it.
I did find
it interesting. You know, lots of people spoke last season about how well West Ham did, and it was maybe in part because their fan base weren't actually in the stadium to support them. Because, you know, they do get on, or it was purported that they get on their players quite quickly. And actually being there live, I noticed that a lot. Like, Brentford actually played quite well. It wasn't necessarily that West Ham were bad. Brentford were, you know, kind of dominating possession.
First half anyway.
Yeah.
Second half, maybe not so much.
Yeah, but like, the slightest mistake any West Ham player made at any point, and it was, you know, there were some guys behind us who were like really like going for it, but you could tell like the entire stadium kind of like sagged and like groaned whenever something went wrong. And you know, I'm not going to be naive and suggest no other football club does that. Like, their fans don't kind of groan if something goes wrong. But I did really feel like the West Ham fans got on their players' back quite quickly. And you know, I feel like that probably doesn't help the situation. They've obviously had a good start to the season, but it'll be interesting to see how they go this year with their fans back in the ground.
Yeah, I think Soufal got an absolute battering.
Yeah,
and
it's
like he was one of their better players.
Well, he was one of their better players, and he was in so much space, and no one passed the ball to him. Like, every single time they were going down the left so much, and I'd look up, and Soufal stood in acres of space. I was like, switch the play. And, you know, have an outlet and go at West and Brentford a different angle. But they just ignored him constantly. And as you say, he's one of their best players last year.
Yeah, it was a strange one. But there was some other... you know, we managed to watch the Man City versus Liverpool game, which was an absolute cracker.
Yeah. Well, we missed the first half because we spent like 35 minutes walking around Westfield trying to find somewhere to watch it.
That's true.
And apparently in that time, City absolutely battered us. So we missed that bit. But kind of listening to the pundits' commentary afterwards, it was all City first half. And then we came out flying in the second half. And so from my point of view, having watched pretty much only the second half, I came away from the game quite disappointed, thinking that we probably should have won it. And maybe on the balance of play, we did have more chances. But I think a draw was a fair result in the end. Given that, yeah, they supposedly dominated first half. So, but yeah, it was a really good game to watch, very end to end. Really frustrating from a fan's point of view because we scored and then literally within 5 minutes after each goal we scored, they equalised.
Yeah.
Never actually capitalised on like getting ahead. But yeah, really good game. And as I mentioned, like Salah, despite owning him, like actually affecting our rank negatively because we didn't, well, you didn't captain him, you had Bruno, but because so many other people had done,
Well, so many other people had stuck it on Ronaldo, who got benched this weekend. Like, that was a... No one was expecting that, I don't think, were they? No one was expecting the... No one was expecting... What do we call it? You know, obviously, you got Pep Roulette, Tuchel Bingo, I think is everyone's calling it. What's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer going to be?
Ollie's merry-go-round? I don't know.
Yeah, I think something like that. Maybe. Not sure.
What do you think about Ronaldo being benched? Do you think he should start every game, or do you think he's got to, you know, become part of the squad? And
no, I think at the end of the day, I know he's an absolute specimen, but surely at 36 years old, he can't play every single game. I don't think he did for Juventus either when he was there. I think it was like played two, sort of wasn't bench, but I mean, like he wouldn't play a full game every third game. So I don't think it's so new, and at the end of the day, he is 36 years old. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I feel like you've got to play your best team. And, you know, the obvious difference is, you know, Salah, Mane and Firmino are all about 29 or 30, so they've got 6 or 7 years on him. But they start every single week without fail. You know, when Aguero could stay fit, he started every week without fail. Kane plays every week. As I said, the major difference is his age. But as you said, you know, he keeps himself in such good shape. I do feel like you play your best players every week. And that's not just because I've got him in my team and expect him to go big for me every week. But yeah, I think it's just unfortunate for United at the minute because they're, and we'll talk about it shortly, but they've got such a difficult run of games on paper anyway. You know, Everton are no mugs and they just had them at home. They then go away to Leicester, Liverpool at home, Spurs away and City at home. If you're trying to manage Ronaldo's minutes, you can't really, in any of those, like none of those games can you really afford to drop him because you need to play your best 11 in those games. And, you know, once we come back from the international break, that's, you know, a game or two every 7 days. So yeah, whether you start him but you play 75 minutes or you bring him off the bench as an impact, I don't know. But yeah, I do feel like you got to play your best team each week, but he is, you know, believe it or not, human, so does need a rest from time to time. But interesting to see he's the most transferred out player this week.
Yeah, I think that's a bit stupid. I mean, like, come on. They're playing a Leicester without Ndidi, who just conceded 2 goals to Crystal Palace.
Well, they're like 14th, aren't they, or something like that, Leicester?
I mean, they're not playing well, and I've been reading quite a lot of things about the fact that Ndidi's now missing for the next, I think it's like 3 or 4 weeks, is massive for them. Like, the amount of clean sheets kept without Ndidi in the team is pretty low. So I think if you have transferred out this week, it's potentially... could come back and hurt you unless Lukaku scores, which I assume a lot of people have gone Ronaldo to Lukaku.
Well, that's it. I think a lot of people are playing their wild card this week, and so if they've got Ronaldo in, then they're probably in a position where they're trying to redistribute funds around their team to kind of have a more balanced 11, given that, you know, Ronaldo had his spurt when he first came in but has kind of slowed down since then, and is likely, you know, he probably will score at least 2 goals in the next 4 games that I just mentioned. But for 12.6 million, that's quite a lot of cash for only, you know, a couple games, goals every few games or whatever. So yeah, they probably kind of realised that you don't like have to rush to him. But yeah, 200,000+ transfers out is quite a lot and quite surprising.
It does, yeah. It seems a bit too much, maybe, especially the fact that Chelsea have got Brentford. I mean, like, that's a ridiculously hard game. So
that's a five
on the FDR, isn't it? So
absolutely.
But they have to put 3 past Southampton. So, and we've got a new super club in the Premier League as well, apparently.
Oh yeah, how good
the mighty Toon are now the richest club in the Premier League, which is absolutely ridiculous
by like 100 times or something stupid.
it's silly. I think it's like, yeah, I think you're right. I think
no,
it's,
not quite 10 times, because I think, yeah, about 10 times, because I think City's is like 30 billion and they're like 300 billion.
It's ridiculous.
It's like, astronomical money. Like,
I mean, I'm like happy and sad at the same time I think about it. I don't know what your thoughts are, but I'm not going to go down a sort of political route of what I actually think about the Saudi Arabian being involved, because I don't really know. I've heard a lot about obviously that side of things, and I don't really want to get too into that side of things. But from a money point of view, like, I'm really happy it's happened to a club like Newcastle, because I think they've got a lot of, like, you know, support. Obviously, you saw the pictures of the, you know, one of our friends was down at the ground when it got taken over, and it did look absolutely ridiculous. But I'm also, it does frustrate me the fact that Newcastle will just be able to go out and buy ridiculous players next. I know, obviously, like, you know, not straight away, you know, everyone's talking about, oh, is Mbappe going to Newcastle? Like, probably not. Like, but it does annoy me that, like, when you look at, and obviously being a Brentford fan, I'm a bit biased, but, you know, we'll never have that sort of money to splash around, like the same as, I guess, the likes of, if you look at like Crystal Palace, Brighton, Watford, Norwich, obviously Burnley. I'd even put like, well, yeah, Everton, Leeds. There's so many clubs in there that just can't afford to spend the amount of money that Newcastle will now be able to spend next year, which again really makes me look towards financial fair play, and just, it just doesn't work at all at the moment. And so, yeah, part of me is quite happy for Newcastle, but also quite sad there's just going to be another superpower in the club in the Prem.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing is, you say that would never happen to Brentford. I think no City fan would have ever said, oh, that's going to happen to us, you know, particularly turn of the millennium. They get relegated, you know, end up down in like League One or whatever it was, and then, you know, and everyone, you know, was doom and gloom at that point. And then you fast forward 6 or 7 years, and these billion-pound investors come in and turn the club's fortunes around. And, you know, similar has happened to Newcastle. They've been down to the Championship only as recent as 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, someone's decided that they're going to come and invest. Now, there's only so many billionaire investors that can come in and buy clubs. But I think financial fair play, it's a weird one. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Like, quite often, the punishments that are dished out never actually take effect. So, I mean, Chelsea had, was it 1 or 2 transfer windows they were banned for? And that actually got enforced. But it seems that Barcelona break financial fair play rules every other year and get a transfer ban put in place, but they still bring in players no matter what.
Well, I think the Chelsea one was because they signed a player underage. I think it was a youth player. It wasn't even to do with like money, I don't think.
Yeah, well, there you go. That just kind of further proves my point that, you know, Barcelona seem to get these sanctions imposed and then they never actually do get imposed. They still somehow manage to sign players. I think when they bought Coutinho, they were supposed to be in the middle of one of those bans and somehow still managed to get him in. And, you know, PSG have like totally flouted them this year and supposedly will get some sort of sanction imposed in the year or two to come. But they're probably they're going for the short-term goal of, well, we'll flout the rules now, win the Champions League, and then it'll be fine because we'll have got the Champions League under our belt, so we won't really care if anything comes in. I don't really think that it's anti-competitive to have this sort of thing happen because, you know, it actually kind of breaks the mold of what's going on. Now, obviously, if you're a Leicester who have got someone like, you know, obviously they've got rich owners as well, but you've got someone like Brendan Rodgers come in and build the club up, and obviously the managers before them, but come in and build the club up on, you know, a moderate budget. They've not kind of splashed the cash willy-nilly. They've spent money, but he's coached the players and they've got better as a team and they've broken into the top four. Now, if you're one of those clubs, then you'll kind of be a bit gutted because a club like Newcastle, as you say, can just come in, spend money, and they'll be competing for Champions League places. But in a way, that's also a positive because it breaks the top six, what it now is, of kind of occluding the rest of the league. And now another team's going to become competitive. So, yeah, it's not kind of the beautiful game way where you just, you know, train and play well and you work your way up from the top. It's kind of the get rich quick sort of, or the get successful quick sort of mechanism that no one really finds that romantic. But I think it actually is kind of positive because it stops the established clubs just winning the title every year. You know, teams have come in like City, Spurs, Leicester into the title race in recent years, but it stops just Liverpool, Man United, Chelsea, Arsenal winning it every year and kind of makes it a bit more interesting. So, and the thing is, it's not even guaranteed this success. It depends how they approach it. If they try to just buy megastars and don't actually gel and play well together, then, you know, they'll kind of stay where they are. But if they kind of approach it the way City have and build up the local area and invest in the academy and invest in all these different parts of the club to make it sustainable, obviously, yeah, they pump in like 100, 150 million each transfer window, but they've got the foundations in place that the club can remain successful with these periodic cash injections. So I think if Newcastle can do something like that, then they'll be successful and it will actually kind of be good for the league. Because ultimately, we do want the best players in the world playing in the Prem. And we currently have most of them, which makes it really exciting to watch. And if we have more, then, you know, only the better, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be... What they've quite realised, though, is that currently, if they do sign Mbappe next year, he'll be playing championship football. So,
can you imagine? I think that's what a lot of people have said this week is, can you imagine they have these investors and they're playing against like Sheffield Wednesday or whatever next year?
Like, I mean, but the thing is, I don't think everyone's saying, like, oh, you know, I even saw someone go, like, oh, should we start targeting Newcastle assets? It's like, well, they've currently conceded the most goals in the Premier League and are currently 19th without a win. So, you know, as much as I'd love to see next year doing quite well, there's a potential that they actually could go down this year, so I don't know what's going to happen.
Depends who.
Well, obviously, in January, obviously, yeah.
We don't like to speculate about managers' jobs, or, you know, even wish them to lose their job. But it seems quite likely that Steve Bruce won't be in the dugout come Saturday, Sunday, whenever they play Spurs.
You know what? Good. I'm really happy for him because the amount of abuse he's getting recently.
I know it is.
He's done a great job.
Yeah, it is unfair. Like,
that team is not a team that should have survived last year.
No.
And he absolutely, the end of the last season, they were on absolute fire.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it's not, but that's the thing that it is, I think it is actually a decent team. But I think the Newcastle fans, you know, they have had it hard with Ashley being their owner, but I think they still, I think, are quite, yeah, just, they've been really unfair with Steve Bruce. I know he managed Sunderland and I don't know, they saw him as, you know, Mike Ashley's guy. But, you know, for them to see that he's Mike Ashley's guy and know that Ashley's put him there in place as like a scapegoat, someone that he knows will take the job and do it on a budget and all these sorts of things. They've got to see through that and say that Ashley's actually the real problem. And I know they all hate Ashley.
Yeah.
But the stick they've given Steve Bruce has been so unfair. And as you say, he's done a really good job with what is actually quite a good team. So I can understand why they might be disappointed being down where they were. But, you know, he also doesn't have the funds that should be available to reach the ambitions that they're looking for, which is like mid-table and pushing on up. So I do feel for him, but I feel like hopefully, as I say, the romantic in me would hope that he's given a chance by Staveley and the consortium and they give him money and he does well and the fans actually get behind him. But I think what's likely is that he will be booted out and they'll get someone else in that they want. Because ultimately as well, I think he has a level. As much as Newcastle fans give him stick and he could get towards mid-table, like he is kind of, you know, a championship / lower table manager. So if they've got ambitions of, you know, competing for the league or the Champions League in seasons to come, then they do need to get a manager of that sort of caliber. So, yeah, it's unfortunate, but I think he probably won't be managing them for much longer. But then who do they get in? Who's going to get them to those aspirations? I've heard Conte is in
Conte.
There.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it'll be interesting because, as you say, they're 19th, but there's no guarantee that, you know, Conte comes in, gets the team playing, or they... even if they buy the players they want to buy in January, if he gets them playing and gets them up the league. So it will be interesting to see how successful they can be.
If Conte can come in and turn Dwight Gale into Erling Haaland, then fair play to him.
Well, Conte is an unbelievable manager. You know, his track record shows that. So I think if they can get him, then it'll be interesting. It'll also be interesting to see if players view Newcastle just as a cash cow or if they actually go there for a project. So I know, obviously, Mbappe probably would prefer to go to Madrid over Newcastle. But do you think they could pitch it well enough to him that he'd see it as a project and want to go?
No.
Do you not think? I mean, yeah.
He's possibly the best prospect, if not one of the best players in the world currently.
Yeah.
So to go to a team that wouldn't have Champions League football and... to be fair, doesn't have the same caliber at the moment of a team like Real Madrid or currently at PSG.
Yeah.
Or the only club I could see him moving to in the Prem is probably Man City.
Yeah. But do you think though that, as I say, like Real Madrid, yeah, they're kind of near the top of La Liga and in Champions League, but, and I know it's a different sort of caliber. They're a similar age, but Aguero, when he went to City, similar sort of age. I know Mbappe, as I said, is probably the established striker in the world outside of Benzema. But if they pitched it to him, you know, I assume City did the same to Aguero. Like, look, you're at Atletico, you do well in La Liga and the Champions League as well. But you come to us, this is our vision. And they've got David Silva, who obviously at the time weren't legends, but have gone on to become legends. You know, they pitched that vision to him. Do you think Mbappe goes on? No, he wants to go to Madrid and that's it.
I think if Mbappe had another year on his contract after this year and like he was stuck for another year and Newcastle next year had built and then maybe like snuck into the Champions League or got Europa League or was in a competition where there was some like actual movement.
Mm.
But do you really see Mbappe going to play with like Andy Carroll and Dwight Gale? Like, I mean,
no, and to be honest, I don't see Haaland going either. But yeah, no. I just wondered like because... yeah,
I think it'll be quite similar to Man City where they currently at the start they buy players who are like either a little bit past it but are still very good.
Yeah.
So or and then young and then they talent. Start to build from that and then they get in some of the young players that come through.
Yeah. But like, you know, even when Kyle Walker went, he was kind of mid-20s, but then yeah, he was kind of up and coming, so they got him. 50 million was quite expensive, but yeah, I don't think they'll get Haaland. But I just wondered because, you know, not outside the realms of possibility. They won't get top four this year. They're too far behind. I think Chelsea are fourth at the minute. They're too far behind them.
Wait, this year?
Yeah. No,
wait.
No, that's what I'm saying. So, you know, he won't have that progress to compare to say, oh yeah, Chelsea are getting top four, so I'll go to them. But
honestly, if Newcastle got top four this year, I think I'd just quit watching football.
They won't because Chelsea are too far ahead of them, who I think are in fourth. So, yeah, that would be too far for them to catch up. But I think... yeah, I don't know. It's just interesting conversation point, I thought.
Yeah. Right.
We'll have Javi Manquillo stay at starting right back.
That's the thing. I love it. All of these. We go on for hours about it. So let's move on.
I'll start off Arsenal Mario Void this week. So, if you are returning or not returning, if you haven't listened to us before, then Snog Mario Void is one of the games that we play in this podcast. We have a few others, but for this week, we'll just be doing Would You Rather and Snog Mario Void. So it is a game where we have a Snog, who is our two-week fling, and then Tom will go on to talk about his Mary, who's someone he thinks he wants to have for the long term, and he'll give you his reasons for that. And then I will round up with my Void for this week, who is someone... It's wildcard based. I think we're going to try and go wildcard based on this. Snog Mario Void.
A little bit, yeah. I think a lot of people are playing it. And if chance, I think even if you're not playing it, they're pretty strong contenders.
All right, so I'll kick off. Tino Livramento. He is the starting right back for Southampton and playing wing back at that. Got an assist last time out against Chelsea, which, you know, as I said, I was expecting Chelsea to batter them, which is why I put him third sub. But, he got an assist. Ward-Prowse, did he stick away the penalty or was it the rebound? I think it was the rebound, like, in midweek. So, Livramento, I think he's playing really far forward. Southampton have been the surprise package for me this year. They really haven't conceded as many goals as I expected them to, particularly with losing Ings. I think he gives, pins the opposition team back. I think Livramento is a great shout. 4 points last time out, and their games coming up are Leeds, Burnley, Watford, Aston Villa, Norwich. So Norwich obviously is unbelievable, but some difficult games before then, but I think they can keep clean sheets in those. So
at the end of the day, he's 4.1 million, so just get him in. Oh, it's 4.2 now, sorry, it's 4.2, but I mean, he's really cheap. He's playing for a Southampton team who've looked a lot better defensively. I know they just conceded 3 to Chelsea, but other than that, they're not looking... Well, in the last 4 games, they played West Ham, Man City, Wolves and Chelsea, and they've kept 2 clean sheets in that. So it's not you can't really complain too much about that, I don't think. So yeah, get him. On the complete opposite from budget to premium, my snog this week is Kevin De Bruyne. They're playing Burnley, so it's going to be 5-0. So just get him in.
Stealing my joke.
Yeah, sorry. I put something on Twitter the other day about he played for Belgium the other day. He got 2 assists. He came on against Italy in the third place playoff, and he immediately got an assist.
Started against Liverpool, scored.
A lot of people were saying that they're playing for a different team. It doesn't matter because he's playing international. Form follows round. Like, he's obviously in form at the moment. He's playing really well. He had 2 great shots against France, who it's not like he was playing some crap team. Like, he's playing the current world champions and then played the current European champions. I mean, he's playing shit teams. Exactly.
Played Spain in the game before France.
No, Belgium and Italy. They played France and Italy.
Oh, yeah, it was France, Spain. Yeah, my bad.
Come on, Cam. he could have easily had a couple of goals against France, to be fair. It was some good saves by Lloris. He came on for 30 minutes against Italy and got an assist. So I really like it as a punt. He only played 30 minutes ish on the last game. He's had a nice big rest. I'm pretty happy with getting him in. It's an easy move for me because I'm on Bruno Fernandes. If you're on Salah, I wouldn't go Salah to KDB. I think a lot of people, if you're on wildcard, then I'd really be keen for that, to get them back to Lukaku or someone like that. It's only sort of, 2 free transfers if you want to roll one at some point. If you're playing a wildcard, usually you've got a good roll in the next week. But I think for a couple of weeks, he's got some good fixtures. They've got obviously Burnley next, and then they've got Brighton. It's obviously a tough game, but, you know, can you see Man City scoring at Brighton? Yeah, probably. And then they've got Crystal Palace. And then that's when the slightly harder run starts up. Man United, Everton and West Ham. And then after that, from 14 onwards, I mean, it's all green on the FDR, which obviously doesn't mean a lot. But
the metric it's good. Of FPL.
Absolutely. So Kevin De Bruyne is my pick. And he's 11.9. He's not Mo Salah expensive. He's not Cristiano Ronaldo expensive.
Yeah, no, I do like it. And did I make a draft this week? I think I did. Maybe I was trying to get Foden in. I can't remember. But I was going to bring Cancelo in. Sadly, Tom was right about Alonso. Chilwell's now starting.
Yes.
And I mean, it was a bit of a, oh, I don't know, a goal's a goal, isn't it? But what's his name? McCarthy clearing it off the line in the last game out against Southampton. So he started, scored, didn't quite keep a clean sheet. But I think for whatever reason, Tuchel wasn't happy with Alonso in, was it the Champions League game he subbed him off?
Yeah, half-time. Yeah. He got yanked at half-time.
Chilwell on at half-time. And then he kept his place for the Southampton game. So, yeah, Chilwell's going to come in short, I think, as well as Cancelo. But I think I need to have KDB as well. But equally, it might be Foden now that he's fit. So, yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Your Mary?
My Mary. So, I'm going to go with Ethan Pinnock for Brentford. He's currently the highest scoring 4.5 mil defender.
Well, isn't Pontus ahead of him?
Or they're on the same points.
Well, there you go.
Now, I'm not going to go into it massively. If you do want to hear me talk a bit more about Ethan Pinnock, then I did a great pod with Ray on his channel, so you can have a look at that as well. But basically, I went to it that basically Pinnock is the best choice of the Brentford defenders. If you're picking a Brentford defender, I wouldn't pick David Rea as a goalkeeper if you're going for Brentford defenders. I've heard a lot of people who are thinking about it. Obviously, after Chelsea, they've got a great run of fixtures. It's obviously Leicester at home, who aren't playing particularly well, then Burnley, Norwich, Newcastle, Everton, and then it's Tottenham Leeds after that. So it gets a bit tough towards the end, but there's a good run of at least five games in there, which I will probably be starting Ethan Pinnock in my team. He heads absolutely everything. He's like 7'9", I think. He's a great header of the ball. He wins quite a lot of the balls, which means he gets on the old bonus point system quite a lot. And he's obviously scored a goal and got an assist. The reason I would go Pinnock over Janssen is because Janssen has got three assists, and that is definitely not going to stay sustainable. I think Pinnock gets higher on the bonus point system because he wins a lot of headers and wins a lot of ball. So I would personally go Pinnock.
Yeah, can't disagree with that one too much. The only reason I wouldn't get him in is because I've got enough kind of, not bench fillers, but, you know, cheap 4.5 fillers in my team. And to be honest, I probably need to have more premium. So, but yeah, Brentford, even if they don't keep clean sheets, their defenders somehow get returns. So I think Pinnock's a good shout. But my defensive shout for my Mary is going to be Rudiger. I know I just said I'll be getting Chilwell in, but I think Rudiger doesn't have that, you know, even though Chilwell has come in and started, there's still that slight question mark over whether Alonso will come back in at any point. And Rudiger's played every minute so far this season. So I think with the run of games coming up, you know, Brentford have shown they can score against anyone. So that could be a bit treacherous, particularly away from home. Chelsea against Brentford next game week out. But I think with Norwich, Newcastle, Burnley, Leicester after that, that is a really nice run of fixtures where you'd expect clean sheets in most, if not all, of those games. And then even after that, they have Man United at home, Watford away, West Ham away, Leeds at home, Everton at home. On paper, all quite tough teams. But as I say, their defensive record this season has been really good. They've only conceded two goals now, I think. Three. But three goals in seven games is ridiculous, considering that in that time they've scored a stupid amount. I don't think I have that to hand. Oh, I do. They have scored 15 goals and conceded only three. So that's just nutty, really. So I don't think much more needs to be said. Like, he's one of their starting centre-backs and they keep lots of clean sheets, so have him in your team, basically.
Yeah, again, I did the Planet FPL Clash of the Correspondents last week with Ted, who's a Rotation FPL on Twitter, and he's the Chelsea correspondent, and he said that the good thing about Rudiger is he's the only player that they've got, really, that can play left centre-back. They have another one called Saar, but he isn't really there yet to play. So Rudiger is sort of pretty nailed from that point of view. I'm going to be watching, just keep an eye out for Reece James as well, once he's back fit. Because it doesn't seem he gets that much competition on the right-hand side, apart from maybe Aspilicueta if they push Thiago Silva in. But it just may be interesting at 5.5 mil still.
Mm. I think I would prefer to have Chilwell over Reece James, though.
I think the fact Alonso's playing quite well, though. I mean, he played really well again on the weekend as well. Obviously, during the international break, he played really well for Spain.
Yeah, it's hard because I think, like, yeah, as you said, Aspilicueta can play right wing back and they can bring Christensen, Thiago Silva and Rudiger in. So it's not even necessarily that there's another right wing back in the squad who's not playing at the minute that can compete with James. It's that someone who is playing can fill that position as well. And then another centre-back could come in and fill that void. I don't know. Maybe if I looked at the stats, it would prove me wrong. But I just feel like his minutes are kind of limited, even when he is fit. I don't know. But, yeah.
I think Rudiger is the pick, though. He's the safe one. I think you're only looking at doubles up, really, if you're going for anyone else, aren't you? So, avoids my favourite part of the week.
Some chance for you to rant. Mine's not going to be a rant. Again, we kind of have struggled this week to... Well, Tom hasn't. I've struggled to pick out someone to avoid. So, as I said, we've got the caveat of thinking about playing your wild card this week. So my avoid is Townsend. Kind of counterintuitive. The guy's in red-hot form. Scored in his last two games. One including away against Man United at Old Trafford. So some feat. But I just think that that isn't going to continue. First of all, he's the most transferred in player this week, almost as ridiculous as Ronaldo being the most transferred out. But he scored in back-to-back games, one of them being Norwich. Was that the worldy one or was that against Burnley? Oh, that was Burnley, the worldy one. But you know, he's got three goals in his past four games. If we look at Townsend's kind of output historically, last season he scored one goal. The season before that he scored one again. He got sixth in the 2018-19 season, and that is his highest ever output. If he's got four goals already, I don't think he's going to score many more this year. Happy to be proved wrong, but I just think, you know, he's had his purple patch and we may well have missed the crest of that wave. Tom also mentioned before we came live that we've still got Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison to come back, and, you know, they are two of Everton's, if not their best players. So they will most likely come back into the fold, and who is going to lose their place for them? You know, Rondon is probably one of them. He's probably their backup striker. So one of those two will come in for him. But then who comes in, who goes out for the other one to come in? Damari Gray is in really good form. Doucouré is like a linchpin of their midfield with Allen, so I don't see either of them going out. So it kind of only really does leave Townsend. But we wait to see, because they're obviously not fit just yet. And if you did bring him in on your wild card, then he wouldn't be too much of an inconvenience to move sideways to Doucouré or to Gray if you wanted to. They're about similar price. But yeah, I just think if I had to say an avoid, it probably would be Townsend, given he's the most transferred in.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. So that's quite easy. My avoid this week is going to be Ramsdale. The reason I'm saying avoid him is the fact that he's kept three clean sheets in the last four Arsenal. They kept clean sheets against Norwich, who scored they kept clean sheets against Norwich, who scored two goals this season. They kept a clean sheet against Burnley, who scored five goals this season, and they got a clean sheet against Brighton. How they got a clean sheet against Brighton, I will never know. But who are the kings of failing to reach their XG. They probably should have scored one or two in that, and he put in a couple of good saves, Ramsdale, but I don't think they're playing Crystal Palace next, who've been actually pretty good. Aston Villa, who, again, they've got goal scorers in that team. Ollie Watkins back fit. They've got Leicester, who Jamie Vardy will inevitably score. I can even see Watford scoring against them. I mean, that's not against the realms of possibility there. I just don't think he's the best 4.5 million keeper. They do have another keeper as well. And just because he's played the last four games doesn't mean that Leno's just automatically lost his place, in my opinion. I feel like he will have another opportunity at some point to prove himself. And so for me, don't get in Ramsdale, have Sanchez. He is just a better option. And even though he's got Man City and Liverpool in the next two games, personally, I'd rather have him, because I feel like over the course of the season, he'll be a better 4.5. And for me personally, I don't want to be that person that has to use a transfer later down in the season when I'm not using my wild card. Make a goalkeeper sub.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's similar with the Alonso and Chilwell situation. It's kind of almost impossible to call whether Ramsdale will keep his position. You know, looking at it, there's no real reason why he shouldn't. I guess it just comes to whether he drops a clanger or not and gets benched. But I don't know if that's necessarily the best answer with a goalkeeper, if they make a mistake to automatically drop them. You also kind of want to have some consistency in your team with the defenders like to know who it is that's playing behind them. So if you don't have to, I don't know why he necessarily would swap out his keepers. Now, you still have the point that Leno is a really good goalkeeper, so for him to just be warming the bench, you know, doesn't really make sense either. But given that Ramsdale is starting, and I think, you know, the opposition they faced is kind of a factor in the fact they've kept clean sheets. You know, they conceded to Tottenham, the half-decent opposition they played against. But as you say, they kept a clean sheet against Brighton. Now, they had a slice of luck in that game, but it's not to say that couldn't continue. So I think, yeah, they've got Villa and Leicester who aren't firing goals-wise. They could very well keep clean sheets against those, particularly, you know, Palace and Villa at home. I don't know. I don't think it's quite as cut and dry to say don't have him. I think even in those games he would make saves, and so we'd get points that way. So I don't know.
I just think you've got Sanchez, who's got Norwich next. Then obviously he's got Man City and Liverpool, but then you've got Newcastle. So I feel like in the next four games, Sanchez will score more points than Ramsdale.
Well, if you could possibly, like at the minute I don't. I have Ramsdale and I have Foster. So I have a 4.5 keeper and a 4 million kind of bench filler who of late has played, but it was kind of the idea that he would just chill there.
To be honest, if you play Ben Foster as your 4 mil keeper, then in the 9 and 10 when they've got Man City and Liverpool, they Watford have got Everton and Southampton, and it's not, you know, the potential of them potentially getting a clean sheet there, it's not horrible.
No, but it's just whether he keeps his place, because I think Bachmann's now back fit. I think he played in this international break for Austria, so if he's
whether he dropped for fitness or whether he got dropped for form, because Foster's come in and he's only conceded one goal in all three games he's played.
Yeah, I mean, it's not horrible. But as I say, I think he's kind of become their backup keeper now.
And he's number one for threat on the ICT rankings, so...
Of course he is. Surely that should be Sam Johnson after midweek.
Yeah, I know. Oh, yeah, what an assist.
I don't know. I just think it's a possibility that you could have both Sanchez and Ramsdale and have two 4.5 keepers that you rotate. I don't know if it's quite as popular anymore to do that.
I'm not a big fan, but...
No, I mean, I used to do it. But as I say, at the minute, I've now got someone who just kind of chills on my bench, and if he plays and can come on, then great. But as I say, I kind of expect Foster to go back to the bench once the international break's over, but happy to be proved wrong. So I don't know. I think Ramsdale was a decent shout, but I can see where your concerns come from of him keeping his place. So,
and I think you're completely wrong, and Arsenal are going to concede lots of goals this year.
Yeah, and I hate you, so that's fine. Let's move on.
We win.
Would you rather? What have you got?
Would you rather? So, if you've not heard us before, then would you rather is pretty much what it says on the tin. I'll give Cam two options, maybe three options in one case this week, and Cam will quickfire back to me which one he'll pick, and then muddle through a reason why. It's usually quite entertaining because they have no idea. Cam usually has no idea who I'm going to say, and he has to completely make it up on the spot.
Wing it.
You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
So first one this week is Cancelo or Aspilicueta?
Cancelo.
And why?
I think, yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one because Aspilicueta has decent productivity as well, but I think Cancelo's so attacking. and City have been just as good as Chelsea have been in keeping goals out. I think they have also now conceded 3 goals this season after the Liverpool game. But yeah, they have Burnley, Brighton, Palace up next, all games you would expect them to not concede in. And even when they then go away to Man United, Everton at home, West Ham at home, like, their defensive unit is so solid. And then you throw in the fact that Cancelo literally plays as a left mid and ends up in the box and, like, or just outside the box, kind of creating chances and things. Aspilicueta does play quite far forward, but I think, as you say, if Reece James is back from injury soon, then he'll probably go back to playing right centre-back, so he won't be as far forward. So, I don't know, I just feel like Cancelo has the better points potential. At the minute so far this season, he has scored more points, 8 more. So not masses, but it is only early doors still. But I think, yeah, Cancelo is the one for me.
Do you think there's any risk of Cancelo losing his place at some point?
Probably not. Obviously, a potential left-back isn't in the fold anymore, which only really leaves Zinchenko. Laporte can play there, but I just think Cancelo has kind of nailed down that spot as his own. And then if Pep wants to rest Walker, then he can go and play him right back as well. So I think his versatility is actually kind of a benefit here, where sometimes it can hinder players being so versatile that they don't actually nail down a place of their own. I think, yeah, he's probably one of the few players that you would expect to start every week for City.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I agree. I'd rather have Cancelo too, I think. I'm currently on Aspilicueta because it was a couple of week punt for the old before the old wild card kicks in. But yeah, I'll probably be getting Cancelo as well. Depends on how many premiums I decide to go with. But at the moment, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Right, the next one is, would you rather have Andros Townsend, Decore, or Demarai Gray? It's a triple.
I would say probably Gray in the long term. I think
just to add to that, so Gray is currently at 5.8, Decore is 5.7, and Townsend's 5.6.
Yeah, I mean, I own Gray currently, and I was quite pissed off because I was weighing up whether to go for Decore or for Gray. Ended up plumping for Gray, and since I did that, Decore scored more points. So yeah, I'm really good at this game, but. Yeah, Decore does break from midfield and, as I say, got an assist last game out, and the game before that he scored and got maximum bonus against Norwich, whereas Gray, in the same time, has only had the one assist against Norwich, which has been quite frustrating, but I think ultimately plays further forward. And so over the course of the season, I would expect him to be more productive. I don't have his stats in front of me of his XG, and chances created and things. So I'm kind of just going by feeling here and eye test. Don't get me wrong, Decore is a really good option. You know, he's 5.7, as you said, only 6.5% owned, whereas Gray is 19% owned. But yeah, it's much of a muchness, really. I think, as I said, Townsend is probably the potential to lose his place the most out of those three, so I probably wouldn't go for him at all. So then it's just kind of take your pick between Gray and Decore, really. Who would you go for?
I'd probably go Decore, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think consistently on the returns, he's been just really good, hasn't he? I mean, yeah, he's only blanked in 2 games this season so far, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, Gray's only blanked in 3.
Yeah, it's true.
And Decore is 7 points ahead in total points. So that is one return in a game. I just think
the positive with Decore is he'll play quite centrally comparatively to Townsend and Gray if they do keep the places when Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin come back in. So obviously they'll be playing more than likely a 2 up top or Richarlison sitting behind Calvert-Lewin. And then with Decore sort of sat in the middle, whereas the other two will sort of be sat on the wings, maybe more so. But, you know, again, like you said, it's a bit of a much-a-much-ish, really. I agree with you. I'd be going either Decore or Gray. I'd probably be not going Townsend at this moment in time, so. Final one, and as you very well aware, I love to use this segment to try and actually help myself. So I am obviously pre-planning. Absolutely. Why not be a little prick? So So I'm currently pre-planning the old wildcard, which may be coming into effect next week. And so in that wildcard, I'm basically going to be making the decision of, do I want Romelu Lukaku or Kevin De Bruyne? Kevin!
Oh, I don't know. De Bruyne does look really good. City look really good. Lukaku had his instant bounce when he first came into the Premier League.
I'm not hearing an answer.
Well, I'm getting there. He's been quite quiet since. I'd say Lukaku. I think he's the premium striker that I've got. Him and Ronaldo at the minute, and I think I'm going to bin Ronaldo and keep Lukaku. I think Norwich at home, Burnley at home in the next four games just looks really, really good. Two teams that I think he can bully. Yeah, I don't know. He has blanked for the past three games, which has been really frustrating owning him, particularly the Southampton game, because he could have easily had two there. And we've just talked about De Bruyne's kind of rise to fitness, more minutes coming along game by game. And we've also just talked about that he's got Burnley up next, which is a guaranteed 5-0, so he'll probably get two assists and a goal or something like that. But yeah, I don't know. Just my gut feeling is Lukaku.
Yeah.
You're going De Bruyne.
I'm going De Bruyne, yeah. I am for the next couple of weeks anyway. I mean, I'm going for De Bruyne definitely this week. Whether I switch to Lukaku on a wild card, I'm undecided on yet, because their run of fixtures, as you said, is just ridiculous. And I feel like having the Chelsea striker in that team. Again, and game week 9 and 10, they've got Norwich, Newcastle, and then Burnley. It's the three teams, I believe, have conceded the most goals so far this season. No, not quite. Burnley haven't conceded, but Newcastle and Norwich have conceded 16 goals each. And Burnley are sixth down on the list, have conceded 11. I do really want him for that. And I don't think anyone covers him.
Well, what I was Whereas just going to say, what do you think about Werner as an option? I know you hate him, but...
No, I just... For me, it's like, I don't think there's... No,
The scouts are touting him as a differential for Game Week 8.
Yeah, the scouts are fucking more than aren't they? So.
Apparently, only two players have had more shots in the box than the Chelsea star over the last two game weeks.
Yeah, of course he's had... That doesn't surprise me at all. Unfortunately, none of them hit the bloody target, have they? Apart from one that went in, but didn't he steal that off Lukaku's foot anyway, you said last week. No, I don't. The problem is with Werner is he'll be rotated. So he's not going to play every game. Mount will come back into the fold once he's back fit, I think. So pretty confident on that. And then the thing about the competition they've got behind the back two, you've got Werner, Havertz, Ziyech, obviously Mount. I mean... Callum Hudson-Odoi.
Yeah.
Similar, obviously, with Man City, but I mean, De Bruyne will start every week as well, but then I think there's players in there that you could potentially, you know, obviously, Ferran Torres has missed a fair few games, but now with the international break, it's looking with, you know, when he's played and where other people have got games, it's looking more and more likely that he gets a game. Obviously, no Jesus coming in for game week 8, more than likely because obviously he's away with Brazil. And then you've obviously got Grealish, Foden, Mahrez still in the fold. So Torres could potentially be playing this week.
I mean, I don't really understand. Well, I do understand they've got so many players that can play there. But Torres, every time I've watched him play in that false nine position for both City and Spain, scores goals. Like he scored two in the game before France, whoever that was against. One really good header and one, I can't remember what the other finish was. But... yeah, I mean, I've already spoken about him a few weeks ago that I was surprised by how good in front of goal he is, because I expected him to be average, basically.
Yeah.
But he has really impressed me. So,
but there's more cover, I think, in the City team that you could be more like Foden. Obviously, people are talking about him quite a lot. Grealish has played pretty much every minute so far.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's missed a game, has he? So
he started if he does, game, but he's been subbed once, maybe twice.
And he's looking, as you said, I think last week, he's looking better and better. Whether he, you know, if he can pick up that form and start playing really well, then Grealish really is the pick over De Bruyne, I'd say, because he played probably playing a bit more attackingly. From a price per million point of view, I think De Bruyne is still the pick, but obviously you can only have so many premiums. So yeah, don't know. De Bruyne to start with, probably Lukaku after that.
Yeah, I mean, it just comes down to the fact that you can't, like, both of them are going to score lots of points this year, and there's only so many of those players that you can own. It's just, can you maximise, you know, your funds?
No, I can't.
No, and neither can I.
But, brilliant.
Yeah, it's that's the challenge, isn't it? Because, you know, Lukaku and De Bruyne are both going to score points this year, but it's who do you get in around them? And which one of them do you go for that's going to score the most? The league.
Absolutely. The league.
Shout out.
Yeah, it was
this week's top scorer, Morris M. The ultimate team with 68 points. I don't know if that's with
68.
Any hits. But yeah, 68 points when there was an average of 38 is pretty impressive. Nearly half of those points coming from Salah, captain, fair play. But then a defensive masterclass of Tomiyasu, Sanchez and Dunk bringing in the bulk of the rest of the points. And obviously Huang had nearly missed that. That's someone else who is kind of ridiculously highly transferred in this week. I think he's second or third. But it'll be interesting to see if he can keep up that scoring form. But yeah, congrats to Morris for that performance this week.
Yeah, big scores. And then we forgot last week to do a manager of the month, so we're going to quickly do that. So yeah, Chris Tellis was the manager of the month in September. Chicken Tikka Mo Salah, what a name, love it. 217 points in September. And Cam, how did you get on last month?
Oh, it was really good.
Really good, was it?
Yeah.
Cam, you were, I think you finished actually, was it second bottom in September?
Yeah, September wasn't a good month.
As we've already, you know, spoken about on the podcast over the last month, Cam has not been having a good month.
Well, basically, we can see like how my season has gone is because August. I was in the top 15 in the league. That's a pretty decent showing, like 247 points. Then September, I was second bottom, which has ended up with me being in about mid table. So it's kind of equilibrium has taken over and
even down
left
nicely.
Me as a yeah, just like distinctly average, which I'll take. So.
That's fine. Good. So yeah, if you want to come join the league, which you're very welcome to do still, it's UEVAGU. We are still going to come up with a prize for first place. I feel like it's going to be quite entertaining. I just want to get something stupid, I'm not going to lie.
Get a cardboard cutout of Hasbullah.
Yeah, could do. That would be entertaining.
Shout out to, like, I think provisionally the worst score this week was Oshin or Ocean. Oh no, I take that back. George Benton and Magnus got 27. No, Mark Landis with 23. Less than ideal.
That is really unlucky, I'm not going to lie. This week has been absolutely brutal. So,
literally, the one return was Pontus's assist against West Ham
then,
for 5 points.
Then the man's a genius. So,
absolute legend.
Man's a genius.
But yeah, get involved with the league. It'll be. We are up to 88 participants now, which is amazing. But yeah, the more the merrier. So as Tom just said, the code is UEVAGU. That will be in, well, on Twitter and in the description of the pod. So feel free to come and join us. Put your wits against three dummies. We should also give a mention that because we're the great employers that we are, one of our members, you will have noticed, isn't here. He's we very graciously granted him extended paternity leave. As we are the employer of choice. So, yeah, Josh will be joining us from time to time, but he is, as I say, on paternity leave. So we will be welcoming him back at some point. But
he literally does have daddy issues now.
Well, mainly him being the issue. But
Him being the issue, yeah, because he is a very soon-to-be daddy. So congratulations to Josh. But, yeah, he'll be partaking with us a bit more going forward because, yeah, you know.
Understandably busy.
He does have to, you know, support an actual life now, unlike me and Cam. So
we can. I
struggle to support myself.
Who are you captaining this week? Well, I mean, what happened? Well, sorry, before we get into that, what happened with captain picks last week? We talked about it very briefly, but you went with Bruno, who got you
which
five.
Which was positive. I mean, that's good. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, it's a return. Whereas Josh, who did Josh go with? Got 16 points.
Vardy. Big old James.
Big old Jamie, who since I got him out has scored more points than the combined 4 or 5 weeks that I had him in this season. So that's great.
Excellent. What would you like to hear?
And then I, yeah, as I say, captain Lukaku, so I only got 2 points, which should be four on there, not two. But,
yeah, so not, and then obviously Sally got 13.
Yeah,
so.
Which was sad. Not sad because obviously it meant Liverpool got a draw against City, which I'll take, but in the captaincy race, yeah, not great. We are trying to compete against Salah this year, seeing whether it would be better or not to just stick the armband on him all year and forget about it, or to try and pick our own individual captains each week. And so far, the answer is just stick the armband on Salah or be better at picking captains than we are. But yeah, we've not been very good so far. So I am currently 38 points behind Salah if I had captained him all year. Josh is 50 and Tom is 30 points behind him, doing better than all of us. But
it's a first. There's always a first for everything, isn't there?
Well, exactly. And there's plenty of time for it to go wrong. So
usually does.
Yeah, we'll wait and see. But that brings us on to who are you going to be captaining next week.
Like, well, obviously Mo Salah.
Yeah, he's got Watford, so that's a guaranteed.
Never back the
points.
Early kickoff.
Yeah, that is the only thing that I have noticed, is it is the early kickoff. But he is playing Watford, who will be likely to score about 5 goals and 4 assists against. So it doesn't give us any inroads on trying to catch him up. But I think, yeah, you've just got to captain him in that game.
I mean, the problem is like, so I do want to sort of captain Kevin De Bruyne against Burnley. But the issue is, if I captain Kevin De Bruyne against Burnley, it means I can't watch the Liverpool-Watford game and actually enjoy it, because I want Salah not to score. Exactly. And I would like to see a good game where loads of goals go in. So yeah. Just captain Salah. It's a boring choice, but his effective ownership is going to be disgusting this week. So just do it. Don't be, you know, obviously if you pick someone else and it pays off, then fair play to you. But it's not, I don't think this is the moment in time where you're going to get a huge rank gain. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
I mean, like, okay, yeah, Salah could potentially blank and Kevin De Bruyne could get a hat trick, but the smart choice, I'd say, the correct choice is just captain Salah, because his effective range is going to be like 170 or something. And if you don't captain him, your captain blanks and Salah gets a goal, an assist, I mean, like anything, that's going to kill you. Mm. Like, that's going to be so brutal. Like, you basically are then, all you're hoping for is your captain to outscore Salah, which, in the form he's in at the moment, like, and obviously this is all pre-recorded, so I'm probably going to eat my words. He'll probably blank or get sent off or something stupid, but the smart choice is just go with him this week. It was a bit like Ronaldo last week. Like, if you went without Ronaldo last week, you're in trouble. And thank God it paid off for me. But if it didn't pay off, if Ronaldo started and scored, then I was pretty fucked. Mm. So,
yeah, wise word from Mr. Tom. But
it's the first time in a while. Honestly, you should just talk absolute shite. So,
well, I mean, up until this point in the pod today, that's what you've done. So
perfect. Perfect. Thanks very much for that. Who are you captaining?
One little nugget. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I say Salah was a shoe-in, but I'd kind of forgotten, even though we've talked about it this pod, that City do have Burnley next at home. So I might go, as I say, I'm planning to bring Cancelo in. I think I'll have to take a hit to do so. But I think I might be tempted to captain Cancelo.
Seriously?
Yeah. I mean, it's the same as, you know, earlier in the season when Josh captained Trent. Who was it against he captained? But it was like, you know, really good clean sheet potential, but also really high attacking potential. You know, Burnley are going to be pinned back to their 18-yard area. You know, they traditionally defend quite deep anyway. So they're going to be relying on a breakaway to get a corner and try and score off that, win a free kick or something. Which will be very few and far between. So Cancelo has really high clean sheet potential. City always score a hat load, and he's really advanced. So Cancelo is a potential option. I'm not decided on what City midfielder I'm going to get in, but whatever one I go with, they could be a contender. But you are right about Salah, that it would almost be stupid not to captain him, because so many people are going to, that even if he doesn't return, you're not really going to lose anything. You're only going to have the, well, what if I'd captain so-and-so and I could have made a gain. But yeah, the safe option is just to go with Salah. So in all likelihood, I probably will captain Salah. I really don't like the fact that it's the early kickoff. If it was like 3 or 5:30 p.m., I'd be much happier. But yeah, I think Salah's probably who I'll go with. But honourable mention to some City assets this week.
Yeah, I think the other thing on Salah as well is he's playing tonight as well. So it's like...
And is that his final game with the
international? Unless he gets injured, I believe it's his final game with the international break, yes.
All right, that'll be good.
Exactly. So that's like quite a lot of days break.
Mm.
And then, you know, it's not, so that's quite, you know, compared to obviously Diogo Jota, people are talking about potentially he's got a small injury. Obviously Bobby's away with Brazil. Oh, is he away with Brazil?
I don't know.
I don't know if he is actually.
To be honest, I think a lot of them didn't go because there was this issue once they come back, but I don't know.
I don't think he did actually. Now I'm thinking about it, I might just be on an absolute plum mistake that I have. He didn't go. So yeah, Bobby's obviously there. But yeah, so I just don't think going without Salah this week is the good option. And there you go.
Well, we will see. But yeah.
That is all we've got time for.
Yeah, the immortal words. That's all we've got time for this week. So yeah, as usual, our socials are on Twitter. So the main pod channel is FPL by Dummies. I'm FPL Dummy Cam and Tom is FPL Dummy Tom. Very inventive. So yeah, give us a follow there and we will be happy to talk rubbish, make memes, post our teams and cry about how poorly they've done. Yeah, just general, get us on Twitter. It'll be great to hear from you. And we'll be back next week as usual. So yeah, good luck for the rest of the international break. I hope you make it through. And then yeah, for game week 8.
Bye.